Hey, this is Frank Todaro,
otherwise known as Starscream.
And you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Hey, this is Frank Todaro, and you're listening to the TFG1 Podcast.
You've just jumped inside the pull bag. Join TFG1 Mike and the rest of the comic crew here at the GCRN as they make their great escape into comics. From DC, Marvel, and Image to IDW, Boom Studios, and Zenoscope, we have everything right here. We cover things like Transformers, He-Man, superheroes, TMNT, and Radiant Black. Yeah, we have all that and so much more. It's all inside the pull bag here on the GeekCast Radio Network. So, without further ado, it's time to talk about the comics we're reading right now, here inside the pull bag.
Hello and welcome to The Pull Bag. This is episode 418. That's right, folks, 418 episodes of The Pull Bag. I am, of course, TFG1 Mike. Joining me is the recently aged up and upgraded Mr. JT from Saskatoon. Hello, sir. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I feel so old.
You ain't that old. I have...
I'm beginning to feel like Cup more and more every day.
Yeah, tell that to my knee. Both of them.
this is fair. This is true.
Yes, and today we're going to be talking about another IDW Publishing Transformers crossover. We have Transformers Ghostbusters. Before we get too far into this, I wanted to find out just how much of Ghostbusters we've done here inside the pull bag. I know for a fact that we have never actually done the actual IDW series. It started with the Deviations issue that IDW did, and then we've done the TMNT Ghostbusters 1 and 2. Mm. And then there was a Ghostbuster Funko Universe comic, because they did a Funko Universe comic with Ghostbusters, Turtles, Judge Dredd, X-Files, which sadly isn't on Comixology anymore. I don't understand that. If IDW is on Comixology, like, some of IDW's stuff has just disappeared from Comixology. The Funko Universe issue, all of the Mask comics are now not on Comixology anymore from IDW. That's crazy to me. I don't get that at all. And I tried reaching out to them, but I got no answer. Anyway.
And also, there's a lot of other sundry stuff that's not even, like, Ghostbusters or Transformers related that you can't find anymore. Like, CVO or Covert Vampire Ops, which is a really... If you're into, like, action-y horror kind of stuff, that's a really fun title at IDW. It leans more towards like 30 Days of Night and that kind of thing, but something I highly recommend.
Yes. Now, we are both Transformers fans, and you're more of a Ghostbusters fan than I am. I mean, I like the first two movies, and I like the real Ghostbusters, but I have never... I'm just not a ghost person. Blame Freddy Krueger. He scarred me as a 5-year-old.
Yeah, well, it might be Canadian, because Dan Aykroyd apparently is a ghost freak in real life. He also started that show Psy Factor back in the 90s. Like, he is Raymond Stantz personified, if you think about it.
Yeah, he pretty much is. Now, they did something really cool with this, and IDW does this every once in a while. They will do connecting covers. Sometimes they're retail incentives, sometimes they're alternate covers. But for this, it's the main covers of all 5 issues connect to give you this big old scene of Transformers and Ghostbusters and whatever. Except there's like this, and I know what it is, and I know why it is, but... they put this top secret question mark part in the middle of where you would see issue 3. And I'm like, what the hell is that? What? And so I go over to the lovely people at the TF Wiki. Yeah. And they, of course, obviously have the full image, even though it is a tiny image on their website. That's fine. It is what it is. But it's basically Ghostimus Prime. It's basically Optimus in the Ecto colors, the green, the white, the gray. So, yeah. I don't mind certain Optimus repaints, but this one, I don't know, man. It just didn't really hit me that.
It's a little too ratchet colors on a new chassis.
Yeah.
Because it's basically, you know, a red and white paint scheme with the tinted green windows.
Yep. And then the gray legs.
His chest shield, whatever you want to call it, you know, his pectorals.
Yeah, it's where he keeps his MacGuffin of leadership.
Oh, salty. Salty.
Hey, man. There's only one true leader of the Autobots. That's the one that is constantly learning how to be a leader. Rodimus rules, Optimus rules. Anyway.
We're going to have a fight.
Oh, of course we are. The series is written by Eric Burnham. Hey, we know that guy. We haven't interviewed him yet, but we will eventually, because he is currently doing the Transformers Beast Wars from IDW. It is illustrated by Dan Schoening and Luis Antonio Delgado, who were the core creative team behind the IDW Ghostbusters series. So I like this because, number one, I've already seen other things that Eric has done, and I've already seen other things that Dan Schoening has done, because Dan Schoening was one of the original TMNT artists for IDW. So I kind of know their art style. I kind of know their writing style. I love the art in this.
Yeah.
But this story is just beyond wacky.
But it's just wacky enough.
I don't know. I think it, like, it takes the wackiness and amps it up to 11. Like, it's just 1.2 wacky for me. It's good. It's now that I've actually reread this twice. So I read this about a week or so ago before we recorded it. And then usually what I'll do for recordings is I will read or at least catch myself up so I'm fresh with opinions and ideas of what's going on, you know, three, four, 5 hours before the recording session.
Yeah.
And as I'm going through this today, I'm like, this is silly. This is fun, but it's silly to a point of being, I'm expecting Billy Mays to come in with OxyClean ads every seven pages here. Like,
oh, I don't think it's quite that silly, but this is like fine 80s cheese mixed with like some like old school Doritos from when we were kids, you know. I mean, you got what is, and I don't mean this in any slight, we got the real Ghostbusters, like we got the movie universe Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. which is very much what the comic is, mixed with the G1 cartoon Transformers.
Yep.
And it's all predicated on the fact they bring back like one of the single most remembered continuity items from the original G1 cartoon, in fact that Starscream's a gosh darn ghost now.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that would have made this crossover better, you know, as we get into it, is if they had somehow written in a scene where you see a blonde, a brunette, and a gorilla tooling around in a convertible. Anyone that gets that reference, you earn 5 cool points.
Well, then I guess I just lost 500. But
Filmation, yes. Ghostbusters.
Yeah, well, you know, real Ghostbusters is the only Ghostbusters for me when it comes to animation. Yeah. So I knew what Dan Schoening did with Turtles, and I've seen what he has done with the Ghostbusters designs. This is my first time seeing his, like, literally, this is the cartoon in comic form. This is the cartoon on the page.
Or animated. The movie, the real Ghostbusters is supposed to be the continued adventures of Dan Aykroyd and Peter Venkman Ghostbusters, You know, that's the idea.
Yeah. But the Transformers aspect of this is really awesome because literally, like, every design from Soundwave to Megatron to Starscream to Shockwave, like, they are all true to the original cartoon designs. And sometimes people will take liberties here and there, but... And I think this did give them an opportunity to do that, because much later... Spoiler warning, folks. The Decepticons get killed, and Cybertron gets destroyed, and they all become ghosts, and it's all Starscream's fault, because Starscream is a moron.
You know, it's I think it's just a tiny bit unfair to say Cybertron was destroyed because Starscream is a moron. I mean, it's not to say that Starscream isn't a moron. It's Ray did the same. He tried to think of the most innocent thing, something from his childhood, something that could never, ever destroy us. Unfortunately, yeah. Starscream is a self-aggrandizing asshole.
That's why he's a moron. Because, hello, Starscream, what did you do? Nothing. I mean, I just imagined myself. Like, I understand Ray. I get Ray doing it. I completely understand that. And then we get the awesomeness that is the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. However...
Stay Puffed's all right. He's a sailor. He's in New York.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The best Stay Puffed for me is Funko Pop Burnt Stay Puffed. Anyway. So we get this giant Starscream who has the Matrix... With Megatron and Optimus heads, Megatron, Optimus, Shockwave, and
Jetfire or Skyfire, depending.
No,
which
no,
way
no,
you
that, no, no, no. That's not Jeff. That's the villain in this. That's the entity that we just saw. That's her head.
No,
it different has to head. Be.
No, that's Jetfire. She had like that weird. Metallic version of the hair that Gozer had in 1984 when she looked like the supermodel with the slime all over. That's trust me, that's Jetfire.
That is not Jetfire. Jetfire never had blue on his head.
Next to series.
I'm talking about animated series.
Okay. Well, agree to disagree because we're going to get far off.
Not, yeah, well, I'm just saying that ain't Jetfire. Anyway, so Giant Starscream, Cybertron was destroyed. We go to 1,000 years later, give or take.
Oh, well, we forgot to mention, Mike. Now, this is around 4 million years ago. The Autobots have left Cybertron, like in the original animated series. The Decepticons are about to give chase, and that's when Gozer the Gozerian shows up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
choose the form of your destructor.
And, you know, out comes like this, you know, female, like Cybertronian version of Gozer. We get the lineup of Soundwave, Megatron, Starscream, and Shockwave, like, you know, when the Ghostbusters get up to the roof in 1984. And yeah, Starscream makes the choice. You know, a giant version of, I know it's like, it's the Starscream from the movie with the cape and the shoulder pads and the crown. I can't help but call him Liberace Starscream, because that's been locked in my head for over 30 years. That this is a Cybertron version of Liberace, which is not a knock to the man. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he ends up laying waste to Cybertron, and we go to 1984. Although, if you look. Two details I noticed on the Temple of Gozer that shows up on whatever Cybertronian building this is. If you look on the corners up in the top, like where those ram's heads are in the movie, mm-hmm. that one piece falls off, they're the quintessons.
Yeah, it's the quintessons, yep.
Now, did you notice the ceiling inside the temple? Like that psychedelic thing?
Yeah.
That's from the opening of Transformers, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Lion's version of the theme song is playing. It's like, holy shit.
Of course.
The eye to detail these guys have, I am never not impressed.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, so we get to 1984. The Autobots are still out in space. because apparently it's like Moses and his people wandering the desert for 40 years. They haven't found a new home in 4 million years.
Yeah, and then there's this weird action figure toy crossover character in here. I am sorry. I love that they do the crossover toys. I love
Gigawatt?
Yes, I love Gigawatt. I love that the toys exist. I have not read. I'm still waiting for Transformers: Back to the Future to be collected, so I have not read it yet. We'll cover it at some point here inside the pull bag. Maybe later in 2021. It might be 2022 before we get to it. But I just this one just did not.
It's the shoulder pads, isn't it?
No, it's the. It's everything about him. Autobots aren't supposed to be that asshole-ish.
He's not an asshole. Think about it. This guy is Ray Stantz in robot form. In fact, if there was an animated film, the only man I would accept as voicing Ectotron is Dan Aykroyd himself.
Oh, you mean Ectotronimus Dynamatron.
Listen, Eck, don't call me that. Yeah, and before he's actually properly named Ectotron later on in this movie, we're just gonna use Ectotron, folks, because my tongue almost breaks when I try to say that his full name.
Yeah,
but yeah, sorry, you go.
I love the inside of the arc. I love everything with the art here. Optimus looks like Optimus is supposed to look. You know, the arc itself looks the way it's supposed to look. Even Ironhide. Jazz looks a little too young. Like his face where he says, "You're being paranoid, Ironhide." I don't know. His face doesn't look like it should, but it's okay. It's not going to ruin my overall score for this, but I love how this looks.
Yeah, and we have that last bullet, same page there as we go through. We're both working with the trade folks. There's that scene where I'm a scientist, Jazz. You know what? If they didn't get Dan Aykroyd, because all this dialogue is like Ray Stantz dialogue, and God rest his soul, if they could have gotten Harold Ramis to voice this character, you know, in that altered dimension where he did not go into the ectosphere. We could have definitely got him to voice him in the direct-to-DVD animated film that this should have been. Yeah. But yeah, so Optimus, I love even some of the dialogue and the art. You almost hear Optimus do that, this again, kind of thing. And they go to Earth, and we find the boys in gray in, you know, well, it says Brooklyn. I was going to say Central Park. Or are they just bordering Central Park? I'm not sure. No, because Central Park's Manhattan. So
yeah, Central Park's Manhattan. They're in Brooklyn.
So yeah, there's this giant-ass sinkhole in the middle of the street, and the Ecto-1's getting sucked into the earth like that one car in Tremors.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sky Spy satellite shows up, and I was like, it's the thing!
Yep.
You see it scan the Ecto.
Yep.
And what did you think of the Electro Ghost that they fought? Like, that design.
I think it's cool. I mean, because again, you know, you have. I'm trying to see on the actual. Yeah, see, it isn't. For some odd reason, it's not on the actual Ecto. The one in the sinkhole?
Well, yeah, but I mean, the front end's pretty well covered up by the time Ecto.
But how would he? Okay, so if that's the case, how would he know to put that there then? If he can't, if I don't know, if
Skyside can probably see through the dirt.
Okay, I'll give you that. It is a satellite after all. So he transforms into his new car mode thing. He gets his Electro Ghost logo, and it's cool. I mean, he's a robot. I mean, what's he going to do? Go drive to the hardware store, transform, and paint it on himself? That would be a weird position.
Yeah.
That would be like all kinds of twist or hell.
Oh, yeah, no. And you know, it's Nazi, we haven't mentioned much about the Ghostbusters busting this weird electro squid ghost in the comic. It's just the dialogue in here, like, that's Ernie Hut, how Ernie Hudson would say something, you know, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis, you know, and I just thought, like, that perhaps before continuing that thought, Ray, you could bind this entity. It's like, I looked right in the trap, Ray, like, just, dear Lord, like, it's just, and I know we're both huge Transformer and Ghostbuster fans, folks, but this really does read like, I hear, like, never before have I read a Transformers or a Ghostbusters comic where I've so clearly heard Peter Cullen or Dan Aykroyd's voices as I've read the issue. I also love Schoening's attention to detail, where you see Ray throw out the trap and you see him step on the pad, and it's not like the foot pad, rubber foot paddy thing that they have in, like, the animated series. It's, you know, you got, like, the flash bulb, and you see, like, that the gold, like, braided computer cord underneath the foot pedal, like, you know, it looks just like the movies.
Oh, absolutely. That's the whole point here, is that, because later we'll see at some point on one of the, like, when we get to the firehouse, Janine will have an invoice that actually has the Ghostbusters 2 logo on it. So, I mean, they are specifically going after the Ghostbusters films.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
films meaning two, because there are only two Ghostbusters films.
Potentially three, but we'll see what happens when Afterlife comes out. But yeah, and that's the other thing I've always loved about the Ghostbusters comics, that, you know, they've worked with, I guess, Sony at this point, because I forget if Sony had the rights when the comics started, but, like, all the Ghostbusters comics that IDW has put out are firmly set around in that movie universe. And it's all about them, like, the 616 Ghostbusters, you know, the core Ghostbusters Earth, like, that meeting the real Ghostbusters, meeting the 2016 Ghostbusters, Extreme Ghostbusters. Well, not really, because they folded those into the thing, but it's just, you could potentially, if you were some mad genius like myself, try and figure out a reading order where this is in that continuity. Like, they just, okay, we fight ghosts, why not? You know, we'll tool around in this alien robot that transforms into our ride, which is something I loved in the several times in the comic, where they're not aliens. And I've always loved that in stuff like this. It's in sci-fi or horrors. Like, it's either aliens exist and ghosts don't, or ghosts exist and aliens don't. Like, why can't we have both, guys? The universe is too big for this. Come on. So, yes. They trap Electro Squid, and then they find out, why do we have two Ecto-1s?
And then they find out, guys, well then, Starscream's a ghost all over again.
Yeah, I like that. He's, like, just talking to him. He's like, I'm here to speak to the Autobot. Grab him. Just, it's just like, it's just, like, it's just another thing for the guys. And then Winston, being the man that we all know and love, asks a very salient question. He said he is here to speak to the Autobot. What's an Autobot? And he turns around, and there's giant Robo Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, and that's how the first issue ends. Okay, so you know how you, and we all collect toys, folks, or we all have at one point or another. You know how they always talk about Robo Kibble? Like, there's too much of a backpack, or there's too much on the legs, or there's no, like, this should have been shifted somewhere else. Just based on this final panel of this issue, I hate the fact that the front end of the car is basically his shoulder.
Oh, the shoulder pads. That's
disgust. Oh, it's just, no. So, yes, the second issue picks up with Ectotron introducing himself to the Ghostbusters.
And I was like, that, I was actually expecting you to be just a bit more intimidated. And Peter's like, yeah, we get that a lot.
Mm-hmm. And then apparently Ghost Starscream is way too damn powerful because he basically breaks out of the trap.
Oh, that's because, like, Ecto zapped it with his little zapper thingy. It's like, but yeah, he comes out like, I'm gonna kill you all!
I mean, I'm... Nah.
I'd be pissed off, too, if some assholes just threw me in a closet and just were gonna leave me there.
Please don't, don't talk about my cousin that way.
Okay.
No. It's when I was six, my cousin Heather threw me into the closet as a punishment, and it was dark, and it was not comfortable in there. So anyway.
Sorry. Yeah, and I like this. You know, they blow up, Starscream blows up the trap. And I love the reference. You know, we always tell them it's a bad idea to turn off the power to a thing, and they never believe us.
Nope.
And as good news is, if it happens one more time, we get a free hat from the insurance agency. Dear Lord, if half the stuff I watched in movies based in New York from when I was a kid were true in terms of bureaucracy like that, I'm surprised there isn't like an IRS SWAT team ready to descend on the Ghostbusters if this happens one more time.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I love that you have Starscream being afraid of enclosed areas and being in the trap, and he's like, it's you, the Autobot. I'll stop. Truce, please. Truce. Right. You believe that? Nope, me either. And, and then throughout the rest of the entire series here, Pete just basically says, hey, you either behave or you're going back in the trap.
Going back in the box. What's in the box? Yeah, I like that. Like, because this is the snivelly, cowardly, Chris Latta-esque Starscream that we all know loathe. And I love that it's like, are you smart or are you stupid, Starscream? Stupid! I am stupid! And I got that with that bit. I apologize for my behavior, almighty Peter Venkman. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy is so much a bottom. Ooh, okay, adult then. Reference. But yeah, so they powwow with Starscream and Ectotron, and he tells them that, I destroyed Cybertron, technically speaking. And you get like a shot of some very well-known Transformers dying pretty graphically. We see the Alpha Guardians getting wasted.
Like Predaking, Devastator.
Devastator just gets ripped in half. Like, I've seen some horror movies. That is not a way to go. Yeah, Predaking literally gets his shit pushed in, pardon my French. And they end up talking to a ghost in a red cloak with a little Kremzeek on his shoulder. And I immediately know where this is going.
Yeah.
But I don't care because I'm all about this ride. And they basically makes a deal like where Megatron is like so completely swept up in his own BS. That, he's going to stop this and he's going to rule Cybertron. And literally, it takes Soundwave, Shockwave, and Starscream to talk him down. And even then, he's looking, it's like, you are all on my list now.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets turned to ashes just like Starscream did in the movie. And I was like, oh, dang.
Yeah, there's no Galvatron in the story, folks.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure Unicron would it probably turn into Ghostbusters Thanos and start worshiping Gozer.
Probably.
But yeah, so Starscream, like, they all get turned into ghosts and they've gone off searching, and Kremzeek's the name of the red cloak ghost, and I was like, called it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's not just one Kremzeek. It's a bunch of Kremzeeks, because we get a bunch of Kremzeeks throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
Just the little yellow guy is the first one we see.
And then we get the where he's literally been searching the universe for 4 million years.
Mm-hmm. For the Allspark.
Yeah, the Allspark and finding a proper body. And he hates living like this. And then Grimzeek shows up. Which is, I'm not saying it's bad. And the Grimzeek episode of the G1 cartoon is one of my favorites because it's just delightfully insane. But yeah, this little energy, like, he's like not a Cybertronian energy ghost, but it's like if a hamster was made of electricity, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that, again, the dialogue here is like, oh, he's just a little bean. And it did just say the name of the thing. Starscream said destroyed his body. Fine, if you're going to freak out about it.
Mm-hmm. But,
I mean, this isn't the sort of energy you throw in a trap, Venkman, because that thing blows up real good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's two traps that they've blown up today.
I know, and the smile on Egon's face, dear Lord, we miss you, Harold Ramis.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this one ends with, you know, Ectotron saying, you know, he's going to call Optimus, and whoops, I don't have a backup radio. I just destroyed this one. And he's like, oh, I bet Optimus is going to want to come down here and check this out. And Starscream's like, eh, you fools.
Suckers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like I said, the art and everything. And as we go through the, like, every chapter basically starts with the cover from the comic folks that Mike spoke of earlier, that awesome jam piece.
Mm-hmm.
If there is one complaint I have about this series, and granted, thankfully they kept the story simple.
Right.
But if we had actually got, like, if we ever get a Ghostbusters Transformers sequel, I want the story to be told, or we already know the story, having seen the covers of this comic, where it's an all-out war between the Ghostbusters and the Autobots versus the Decepticons.
Mm-hmm.
Like out in front of the firehouse, because I'm sorry, I want that so bad. Like when and I didn't even like I had read the previews for comics for ages when this mm-hmm. first was announced, and I was like, oh my god, this is the thing that I always wanted that I didn't know that I wanted. It's the only other better 80s crossover comic that has come out is He-Man Thundercats. And if I was the sort to start petitions on the internet for things that will probably never happen, I would start a petition to have DC and Sony team up and do an animated crossover film for that. I'm just saying.
So we get into issue 3 here, and we're at the firehouse, and Ectotron meets Janine, and she's the one that gives him his name, essentially. You got to be kidding me with that name. I'm not calling you that.
Yeah. References RoboBuster.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, that's more of an animated series reference, but I caught that. And I love how she's having absolutely none of Ecto's shit.
Yeah,
he's like, I would never damage anything. He's like, support beam.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And she's like, Ectotron. And then she, for the rest of the thing, she's just, anytime you want to fix that.
Yep. And then Starscream shows up and scares the living daylights out of her.
Yeah. And another little background thing, it doesn't really become a character, like, because I think most of the comics, at least what we know from the ongoing, it takes place after Ghostbusters, the video game from 2009. So, you know, Viggo the Carpathian and Slimer are in the main, like, lobby of, like, you know, in the main area of the firehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you're a Ghostbusters fan as I am, you love these little nods. Like, fan service is never a bad thing, in my opinion. Oh, yeah, Slimer's upstairs. I forgot, because...
Yeah, Slimer's upstairs in the little thing, yeah.
And I like how Starscream's go to, you know, shifts his ghost form into an almost human-sized being. And then, you know, he forgets himself, as Starscream does, and starts talking crap to Venkman, who is nothing if not Petty Murphy about it.
Mm-hmm.
And sucks him into a trap.
Of course. Put him in a trap, because I think I'm the first psychologist who can claim to specialize in analyzing alien robot ghosts.
Yeah.
He's not an alien. Thank you, Egon, but he does give off a sneaky vibe. I figure we'll all be happier if he's just kept on ice until E.T. can phone home.
Yeah, and then they finally fix the radio, and Ectotron calls the Ark, and who answers but everyone's favorite metal-munching dinosaur, Grimlock. I'm sorry, Grimlock, outside of Optimus Prime and Megatron, is my number one favorite Transformer.
I liked him when he had his new brain.
Yeah. Me, Grimlock, need no strategy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the things I liked about Gary Payton's Grimlock in 2015 RID was, you know, he spoke in complete sentences. He didn't kind of speak in the first person the way 80s Grimlock did, but he's just as dumb and lovable as, and this was me as a kid. Like, I'm not saying I was an idiot, it's just, you know, didn't really have a concept of my own mortality or a sense of my own strength, and I tore through stuff as if I was a robotic T-Rex. So
everyone always talks about, and this is true, and I've been watching a lot of the old Peter Cullen panels at various conventions recently, and everybody always talks about how G1 Optimus is kind of John Wayne-ish and Abraham Lincoln-ish and this, that, and the other thing.
And
while I do love Eric Burnham's writing, I am sorry, there's no way in hell that G1 Optimus would say. So Ectotron tells him, oh, you can call me Ectotron Optimus. I've been convinced it's easier that way. Oh, thank Primus. Have you found the source of the... There's no, like, G1 Optimus would not be that passive-aggressive with that kind of... I don't know. And
I'm sorry, for a 30-foot-tall transforming robot who surfs and plays basketball, I can totally see him doing that.
I can't, but you might be able to see him doing that. I just can't hear Peter Cullen in my head for that. What I do love is two exposition-heavy minutes later, cut down on all that dialogue that wasn't needed.
Yeah. So the end of the Ghostbusters and Ecto have to take off to deal with a call.
Yep.
Hit the siren. We like that siren. Also, when you see like the comic book version, and it is noticeable in the toy, is Ectotron kind of has a shell former kind of quality to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of appreciate that, because in certain toys, like, sometimes the design that's a necessary evil. It's like when you know, you're talking about Kibble before, and it was on that cover where you see Astro Train. And that's one of the things I hated about the original Astro Train toy, is how the rocket boosters just kind of hang them on the back like that, and you know, they don't turn into like shoulder pads or something.
See, that, like, the original G1 Astro Train, I didn't mind that, because I felt it was a natural progression of the transformation. But I don't know. And Ectotron, like I said earlier, I love the fact that they do these crossovers. I think it's great for the toys. The comic, I'm kind of coming around to it. It's not, like, it's not as... I didn't think this was going to be bad, but I didn't think it was going to be, like, Eisner Award-winning good either.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where I just can't get that invested in Ectotron. Whether it's the toy or the comic, I just can't.
And, you know, that's fair. And this is really just speaking as guys who grew up in the 80s, and when I say OG fans, not to make us any better than current fans of Transformers or Ghostbusters, folks, I'm not trying to gatekeep here, just specifically speaking between you and Mike, you're either like Mike who can't get with it or me who's all about it. You know, it's, and that neither of those are good or bad things. It's just, you know, you either love the concept and you're like, oh boy, I can't wait to see what's next, or,
Yeah, and I think for me, it's more the it's more the robot mode than anything else, at least in the comic. Like, I can get behind the alt mode because the alt mode is essentially just an Autobot driving an Ecto-1. Almost 35 years now. 1986, 35 years ago, I was at the Boston Budweiser Expo, where number one, I stood in front of, and I sat in kit. Number two, I stood in front of, I don't know, I don't think it was from the movies, it was probably one of the touring cars. I stood in front of an actual Ecto-1. I have a picture of it. It's just the robot side of it for Ectotron that I just can't. There's a huge disconnect for me, and it has to do with those 80s shoulder pads.
Yeah. Sure, talking a lot about shoulder pads in this episode, aren't we, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
And we get back to the arc, and Wheeljack's like, this is a bad idea, Optimus. I mean, Decepticon ghosts, seriously. And Grimlock says the thing, we Grimlock ain't afraid of no ghosts. And mm-hmm. I was just like, yeah, he said the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember off the top of my head, like, maybe it's the art and maybe it's just the dialogue. Like, do you remember who the voice actor for Wheeljack? I don't mean to put you on the spot like that.
Yeah, no, I honestly don't remember. You think I would, but Wheeljack was one of those voices that had, he had not a vocoder, but...
Well, he didn't have a mouth. He just had, like, those headlights, the fins that would blink when he talked.
Yeah.
But I hear, like I said, like, so much of the stuff, you hear Wheeljack's voice as he's nattering on and on.
I already got it.
Okay.
Oh, of course. I should have recognized it. Duh. It's Starscream. Lotta did it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I actually did not know that.
Yep.
But yeah, so Optimus is coming down to Earth. And the Ecto and the Ghost, he's a Ghostbuster at this point. Like, it's the Ghostbusters. And they go to this warehouse where they're tracking Kremzeek. And mm-hmm. Optimus shows up, and like, you look in the panel in the back, you see that yellow cab that Optimus obviously scanned. And then you see Motomaster in the back, and you see, I forget the name, but it's that big rig. Venom, the big rig equivalent of Rhino.
Yep.
In the back there, which is awesome. And then you see, like, Wheeljack and, well, actually, that's not Wheeljack. You see Motomaster, and then over by that mall or whatever, you see the other Stunticons.
Yeah, you see Dragstrip and Wild Rider and Dead End and Breakdown. Breakdown is the white one that you see there. The semi next to, okay, so Motormaster's on to the left of the yellow thing. To the right, not to the left, to the right. And then right next to it, that first semi, they could have really done something cool there that would have set up something a little more up my alley for later. They could have made that the flag semi, and we could have gotten a Transformers Knight Rider crossover.
Ooh.
But they didn't do that, so. No,
well, I mean, there is that dark one in the middle. That could have been we just can't see the flag logo.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe.
But yeah, so Optimus, and I love between the movies and the cartoons, the alley between the firehouse and the building next door, it's either just wide enough for a garbage truck to get down, or it's big enough to have like an almost entire other work area for the Ghostbusters. And mostly I noticed that in like Extreme Ghostbusters, but Optimus backs his ass up in there and decides to put himself in like a rest cycle. And then these two punkers show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how they're not mean or anything. Like, they're graffiti artists, which is cool. I mean, there's vandalism and there's graffiti. And I just love the, wow, that is a beautiful piece of unsullied real estate. That is like fate. Let's make some art.
Yeah.
And then when Ghostbuster, or when Optimus wakes up later.
Yeah, he's not looking so good.
I know, but you can almost see if you could watch the voice voice recording for Peter Cullen. Just, I love when you see behind the scenes of him acting, how a lot of them, they act this way, so you could see like the, not what I expected.
Yep. Yeah, if there was anything I could do right now, if I had a DeLorean to go back to 1983 or whenever the actual production of the voice recordings was done, I would love to be a fly on the wall in a Wally Burr recording session.
Oh, God, yes.
So we get to this warehouse. The Ghostbusters basically find the ghost, trap the ghost, all that. And it's this weird energy-eating entity. And I'm like, oh, that's going to come back later because they're going to use that to defeat the other. Like, as soon as I saw that thing, and I'm like, oh, they're saving that for later.
Yeah. And, they get back, and Ecto's going to call Optimus, is like, where are you at? And then he walks in, and I like the 1984, the I Love NYC, the Ghostbusters logo over the Autobot logo.
Yeah.
And I hate the fact that, damn you, Ectotron, for ruining such a perfect Peter Venkman pun when he says, when in Rome, I guess I hope this doesn't make you a pessimist prize. Who's going to see the thing, Ecto?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the I Love NYC. I love the fact that Dan Schoening apparently was also able to put his own initials on Optimus, because the DS is obviously Dan Schoening. The 555-1383, I'm wondering if that's a real... I know most things that... Hey, folks, look here. There was a thing recently that was unearthed that it was 1-800-555-whatever. Instead of being what it was supposed to be, it was actually a sex line. This happened a couple years ago, I think. But I'm curious what the significance is of the 555-1383.
Apparently, it is the phone number for Meredith's apartment from the Grundle episode of Real Ghostbusters.
Oh, God, I haven't watched Real Ghostbusters since we did episode 65 of Tooncast, so there's no way I would have known that.
Yeah. But yeah,
that's so awesome, though.
And that just proves, Burnham, he's us. He's a nerd.
Absolutely.
And, I love Janine in this version of Janine, because and very much because it's set in the movie universe, but it's not, Jesus, I cannot think today. It takes the best parts of Annie Potts' Janine and mix it with, animated Janine, and how she very simply explains when in Rome, because Optimus was just not getting that. No, and he's like, oh, thank you. I understand now. And then Peter comes down. We're going to talk to Starscream. The trap is empty.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And we get, into the fourth issue where they move to the establish, again, this is something from the IDW comics, that they have a warehouse that is like a backup HQ and allows Ecto and Optimus to, stretch out a bit. And you see the the ghost buggy in the background, and there's the, was that Ecto 3 was like the helicopter bike, right?
You're the Ghostbusters expert. Or no clue.
It's been a while since I watched the cartoon, and Optimus has used his nanochromatic thingamajigger to adopt proper colors, and it basically, he even mentions, it covers up the graffiti. It's still there underneath, so it's essentially like a jacked up thing. And then Peter makes the mention, I bet Ray's already dreaming of an Ecto semi for his very own. And I was like, well, of course he is, Peter. I mean, do you not work with the man?
Yeah, really.
But I think my favorite thing is when you look that first full-on shot of Optimus in those colors, I think it works. Again, a little too much like Ratchet, like we said about Ecto. But yeah. The thing is, if you swap out the white, like keep the red, or turn him into teal, and you swap that top half white out, that basically he's halfway to looking like some of the Nemesis Prime slash Scourge toys that we've gotten over the years. Like I don't know if that's a necessarily, I'm just seeing that, or that's something that Dan and Luis, you know, put in the mix here.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it could be that, but it's one of those things where you could do that, but I think they did it this way because they wanted it to, number one, fit in with Ectotron and fit in with the Ghostbusters, and number two,
yeah,
and it's a white Optimus Prime. It's a stand-in for Ultra Magnus.
He's not wrong, folks. And no, not. And over the last few pages, I'm wondering what Winston was working on there. And it turns out they're just making a giant adapter pack for Ecto to use. So they basically, they basically made a variant of the Pretender technology for Ectotrons. They got these two halves. They put a fully functioning unlicensed nuclear accelerator in between. Mm-hmm. And then strap it onto the back of a Cybertronian life form. And I was like, this is the greatest comic book ever.
I'm sorry. I'll fix everything.
I am like my inner child is smiling so much reading this comic, folks. But yeah, so they test it out, and what happens? That is Ecto 3, the helicopter bike. Ecto nukes Ecto 3. I love Peters. I'm starting to think Janine was right to worry about you. I'll fix everything. I'm sorry. Please don't hate me. I could never hate you, Ecto.
Mm-hmm. So they roll out, and I guess my only complaint is, and I'm sure I can look at pictures online of the actual toy. My only complaint about Optimus really is that we don't get to see his alt mode in the colors enough. Like, you see him transforming into vehicle mode, so you see the front end of the truck, and when they get to where they're going, you see him transform back into robot mode, so you kind of see the trailer, but it's like,
but it disappears really, just like the cartoon.
Of course, I mean, you know.
And also, I'm going to have to write this down, check it out. Like when they transform and they have like the sound, I got to look up and see if that's the actual, I think that's the actual phonetic spelling of that sound.
Probably.
But yeah, they come upon this, this power station where it's clear skies, nothing but clouds. And then, how dare you interrupt me, Peter Venkman, when I have the upper hand? And I'm just like, oh, you dumb, beautiful idiot.
Mm-hmm. Starscream never learns.
Also, they turned Optimus Prime's cannon into a proton gun, and I'm smiling so much on the inside.
Mm-hmm. It works.
Yeah, and then I would hope to contribute some questions, if not take part in the interview, if you ever got Eric Burnham. I'm just saying, if I can't be there, let me know and I will send questions. I have a couple. Mm-hmm. Like Kremzeek's cloak. Does that not look like Shadow Weaver from She-Ra?
Oh, of course. That's the first thing I'm like, what the hell is Shadow Weaver doing here?
Yeah. And then Kremzeek, because I'm identifying him as a him, but it's an entity. I'm just using a male pronoun. He opens up his cloak and absorbs Starscream. And I remember the first time I read this comic when this first came out a couple of years ago. I felt this chill of this slight feeling of dread run up my spine. And it sent me back to that episode. I forget the episode, but there's like the big fat ghost. who's like absorbing ghosts into him, and he almost ate Slimer. And I remember watching that cartoon as a kid and like, no, not Slimer. You know, like I got that brief moment of like, oh shit. But yeah, Kramzeek absorbs Starscream, and he goes back to, we get a flashback to 4 million years ago where he disintegrates the other three, and he was going to destroy them and may have destroyed them. And Starscream's the only one that took a knee.
Mm-hmm.
So it throws, of course, we knew Starscream was lying the whole time. We just didn't know the context.
Oh, of course.
And then we get what is very much a throwback to the rooftop scene from 1984 where, you mm-hmm. know, let's show this prehistoric bitch how we do things downtown kind of moment.
Yep.
And, I love Peter. Egon, because Egon's like, fire! And mm-hmm. Egon, this is on you. You broke the whole mystique of us being so awesome that we could finish each other's sentences. Thanks for that. And I love the fact that Kremzeek's design, like once we see a Kremzeek the scavenger as he identifies himself, he, you know, he definitely looks like an energy ghost, but he doesn't get the kind of disproportionate designs that a lot of Ghostbusters ghosts have, that design where, well, sure, they have a basic arms, legs, head kind of thing, but something's like gangly and like way over exaggerated like that. Yeah. Like he looks like a super villain, and I kind of really enjoyed that we get a proper villain, visually speaking, for the Transformers and the Ghostbusters to fight.
Yeah, it makes much more sense.
And then you get the Ghostbusters and Ecto, like they bring in the mood slime, which I love that line. It's like, you left in my vehicle form, right? Along with these empty traps, a canister of slime, and enough food crumbs to compose another meal. You foreign, disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Like the salt, Ecto, the salt.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you think of how they ultimately defeated Kremzeek here?
Like I said, predictable, but I'm glad they did it this way because it was the only way they could have done it. Because as soon as I saw that thing earlier, I'm like, they're just going to let that thing sit in the trap, let it energize itself, and then let it feed on Kremzeek.
Yeah. And then, of course, I love the thing, I don't care how it worked, I'm just glad that it did.
That explosion did more than you know, insect. In fact, it did the only thing that mattered.
Necto is like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like the dialogue, like I hear Frank Welker. If you don't hear Frank Welker, I'll accept David Kaye as a substitute. That is a fine alternate. Maybe mm-hmm. Hugo Weaving if you're drunk.
Yeah. And this penultimate issue ends with, but what I am not, is, as an old friend once said, is afraid of a ghost.
Yeah, just. And Proton X, you know, just like
mm-hmm.
it's just hitting all the nostalgia buttons in the best way. In the best way. And we get, you know, the cover and the trade as we go into the last issue is mm-hmm. Grimlock munching on, I think that's Thundercracker.
Yep.
And because the color is off. So, I mean, it could just be one of the.
No, it's Thundercracker.
Yeah.
The color isn't off. It's Thundercracker.
Yeah. And we get into the Optimus versus Ghost Megatron fight. And we get, for like the second time in this series, the other three like teaming up on Megatron to make him agreeable. Like, if they can help us get new bodies, you know, I wish I could do a Corey Burton voice for Shockwave. It's legit one of my favorite villain voices in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And Megatron's like nuts to that. I don't need you. Your help is worthless. And he does like the weird, like Freddy Krueger distended arm, just pimp slaps Optimus Prime.
Yep.
And where the guys are like, you know, maybe we go with Megatron on this. So the other guys start attacking Ghostbusters, and we get spectral versions of the cassettes, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's what I was talking about earlier, was that, yes, this does look all very G1 Transformery, but they were able to use their own designs on certain aspects, basically just changing the color of the cassettes to green and things like that. I mean, they still, you know, Buzzsaw, Ravage, and Laserbeak still look like themselves, but because they're green in nature, it gives them a little bit of flair, and I think it gives...
Well, it's better than the blue tinge that the main four Decepticons have. And strictly speaking, having steeped myself in the Ghostbusters fandom over the years, like, Soundwave is Soundwave. Like, you know, he just got nuked and he's turned into a Cybertronian ghost like Starscream did in the animated series. I don't think these are actually the cassettes themselves. These would be classified as like low level manifestations. Like, one of his spectral powers might just be forming these creatures from his own ectoplasmic energy or something. Or it could just be them and they're, like you said, doing colors.
It's cool if, because again, if the cassettes are already in, if the cassettes are inside of him, like they usually are, then if he died, they died. Like, you know.
Yeah, no, I got you.
If you and I are standing next to if I'm standing on a landmine, heaven forbid, not that I would ever come into contact with one, and you're next to me, and I step off of it, or you push me, or something causes me to not be on that landmine anymore and it explodes, either we're both going to die, or I'm going to die and you're going to get your arm blowed off or something, kind of thing. So it's like cause and effect. Like, that's just the way I see it. Would it be cool if it was the ectoplasmic buildup and things like that? Yeah, sure. But I don't know.
Yeah. And then we get a reference to, if there was a trinity of 80s cartoon properties that we loved, it'd be Transformers, Ghostbusters, and G.I. Joe. Because Winston says, there are just too many lasers flying around, man. Makes me feel like I'm in one of those G.I. Joe cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Soundwave gets trapped. Shockwave gets trapped, I think.
Yep. And then Starscream breaks free, and he's like, I can take my revenge. Wait, I can be smart about this. I can run away. I can be a coward and live to fight another day.
Yeah. And we'll be back. Peace, bitches. And, like, you know, Venkman, well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
You know, it's funny. After reading this, because this is my... Okay, yes, I said earlier, this is my second time. And it is, when I read it earlier today. But when I read it the first time a couple weeks ago, when I got to the end of issue 4, when they got rid of Kremzeek, I'm like, okay, what's left? What's next? And then I'm realizing, oh, right, we have to do something with the Decepticon ghosts. And then that's what this whole final issue is a battle for, you know, beating up the Decepticon ghosts. And what I think is really cool, and this is, again, this is why he's a bad leader. This is why he goes surfing while Megatron and the Decepticons, you know, destroy the dam. Optimus knocks the Megatron ghost into Ectotron, and he basically possesses him. And I'm like, oh,
yeah. And shit. We get that anatomy... I forget the proper term for it, but it's like when you look in an anatomy textbook and you see like what a human looks without their skin, we get that schematic view of like when Megatron was turned into Galvatron. In the film.
Yeah.
And just before that, I like how you think Optimus needs our help with the last one, and Ecto's like, I don't know, guys. I think Optimus has got it covered. And that's a reference to several times in the book, like how Optimus has really good ears and he's just that gosh darn good because it's Optimus mother freaking Prime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course he's got this. It's Optimus, like, duh. And yeah, so Ecto gets possessed. And I just love the venom in the, well, Prime, it appears I have evolved. And I was just like, dear God, I want this to be a real cartoon so bad. But yeah, yeah. I love how Peter's got like, hey, you got mood slime. And we all, you know, it's that's much too small a sample rate to affect so much metal. We got the Statue of Liberty moving with it. Yeah, we used gallons of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I honestly don't want to know how many times they had to switch out the slime canisters and their slime blowers and that thing to spray the Statue of Liberty on the inside. And I'm pretty sure they just didn't spray the feet. Like, they must have coated that all the way up.
Yep.
But they essentially... It's like Playground Rules. Like, they trip... they trip Megatron and they force-feed him... mood slime, which causes Ecto to puke him out.
Yeah.
And then we get this awesome redesign of a spectral Megatron who's like, I know ghost-like.
Yeah, it's very Hugo. It's very Transformers Michael Bay, Transformers number one, Hugo Weaving Megatron.
Very much so. But it looks awesome. I mean, I don't see how, like, and now he's just, I think it would be fair to consider him a little more of a plain Jane ghost in that, you know, you look at Megatron, so he has this very humanoid form, and this is more of a very humanoid ghost with, like, no kibble on to suggest what he would transform into. So this is, like, a protoform version of Megatron, if you will. And, I love how he's like, I'm going to possess you instead and rule the universe. And well, no, because you're a ghost now and Bustin makes Ectotron feel good.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I would not be beaten by these fools. And then the whole, you kind of want to step on him right now, don't you? Be honest. Oh, he's like, it had crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm. And then what throws me off here is some of the other, like, why am I feeling deja vu right now? It isn't about what Optimus is talking about. It has nothing to do with the script or the story. Completely blue sky, complete sunlight. It just throws me off with the colors that the bots are, and I'm like, that just doesn't... I'm not saying it's bad art. I'm just saying it's like, hey, it's a fully, you know, bright, sunshiny day in Brooklyn. That's strange.
And again, I do think that's odd. I do wonder, and again, one of many questions I would like to ask Eric Burnham, is this a nod to, like, once Gozer shows up in the movie and how all the, you see the clouds spreading out from Spook Central.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be a reference to that. And, you know, we know that ghosts exist now and aliens exist. Egon, let it go. And Optimus gives Ecto permission to stay on Earth for a while and then, you know, go out to search the universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love that how he just the Ectotron name tag on.
Yep. Now he doesn't look so derpy to me, now that he actually has the name tag on. I'm like, what is that spot supposed to be there for? I'm like, oh, right, they're going to put the name tag. Again, it's not that I... Again, this is the... In preparation for this recording, I have not read this series before. I've had the trade for months or whenever, however the hell long ago it came out, a couple of years, I don't remember. But it's like, I'm seeing certain things and certain aspects of this where I'm like, I know where that's going. I know what that's going to be. Can't we just get there?
Yeah.
And we got there fairly fast. I mean, this isn't, you know, this isn't Shakespearean here. But the ending kind of is, because the end, period, giant Decepticon logo and with the glint in Starscream's eye. I love that. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a nod to, like, old horror movies in 50s, B sci-fi movies,
mm-hmm.
where it's the end? Like, if you've ever seen the original Steve McQueen, The Blob, It ends with them dropping it in the Arctic, and then the end, and it shifts in question mark. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because and that's like in the future, because they established that Ecto is going to stay on Earth for a while and work with the Ghostbusters. And Optimus, like I said, is given his permission. You go off and search the universe for other Cybertronians and more Cybertronian ghosts, and, you know, keep in touch. And I love how he's like, oh, thank you, Optimus. And he hugs him. And I could just see Pierre, they're like very Reverend Lovejoy.
Yep.
And, Ectotron takes off and Starscream's, I will have my revenge, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're saying about the scale, like the scope of the story, it's needlessly uncomplicated. Like, sometimes when the guys like Eric Burnham and many other writers who've done, like, you know, Thundercats, He-Man, or even Superman, Thundercats in the very early aughts, like, it's just, you can't go in with any preconceptions. It's the Ghostbusters teaming up with the Transformers. Let's go. It's going to be inherently silly, and it's probably not going to make a lot of sense, but it is what it is.
Like I said before, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Now, when I first heard about this, when I first saw the solicitations years ago, when IDW first had it solicited as single issues before the trade and everything else, I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because, well, like we've already said, we both liked the real Ghostbusters. We both liked the G1 cartoon. And the fact that the G1 designs in here, the actual G1 designs, not the Optimus repaint stuff, but the fact that they are so on model to what was in the cartoon, like, I want Ghosts of Cybertron, like, for everybody now. Like, I just, like, the planet's dead, the bots are dead, but they're warring as ghosts kind of thing. Like, I really dug the ghost designs. There are, at the back of the trade, folks, as always, there are all of the variant covers. One of my favorites is Starscream as the Ghostbusters 2 No Ghost logo. This is done by Priscilla Tramontano. I love that one.
Oh my god, I just realized what the first alternate cover is. That's the box art to the Ecto-1 toy.
Yeah.
I just got that. Holy shit.
The one by Nick Roche?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got some of them, like, it's basic. It's variants on the Ghostbusters in front of Ectotron. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite alternate cover is, it's after the one by Alex Milne, which one of my favorite Transformers artists, but it's the art by Nick Roche, the second one, where they're doing the finger guns dance down Fifth Avenue in New York, and you got Ectotron and Optimus in the back doing that.
Yep. Another one of my favorites is one by Andrew Griffith. It's one after that. It's all the Crimzeeks with Starscream and all that. I thought that's hilarious.
Yeah. Then there's the, which is sometimes a regular thing with alternate covers for Transformers, there's the schematic cover
for Ectotron. Yep.
There's
the badass Evan Stanley cover of Optimus.
The action hero.
Yep.
Poster. Yeah, no, that one, just like with the lightning strike in the background. Ectro versus Stay Puft is nice. I really dig the one following that by Clayton Crane, who is, all his art has this very slick look to it. Yeah. Like, when you look at it, you can't help but think slick. And I love his art. I don't think it works so well here. Like, it works for the Transformers. It doesn't really work to make the Ghostbusters look like they've been covered in KY jelly. And if you want to see some really good, there's a couple of, pardon me, Ghostbusters miniseries from the early aughts. I think it's Road to Damnation and Trail of Tears. If you're a Ghostwriter fan, I highly check that out. And then we get a couple of shots of the
actual toys. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is Transformers Ghostbusters mashup Ecto-1 Ectotron figure, and then Transformers Masterpiece Optimus Prime Ecto-35 edition.
Yeah.
So that's basically Masterpiece Prime, but painted as Ecto-Prime, as, you know, Prime got slimed.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
I love that little Slimer perched on Ecto's shoulder there.
That is very cool.
I just wish I could afford the Ectotron and get Ectotron and Gigawatt and put them on a shelf together. But since the only prices I found for them is like somewhere between $50 and $65 here in Saskatoon.
Really?
I'll just put that on my Christmas list.
Wasn't Ectotron a Walmart exclusive?
It was, and I've seen it out in the wild at Toys R Us, and the comic store, 8th Street Books and Comics, here in Saskatoon, they have a couple of Ectotrons and a couple of Gigawatts on the wall for purchase, which I'm sure they just ordered through their distributor, because you can do like that too. So you either find it at Walmart or you find it, you know, at a specialty store. It's just, yeah. I can't afford that.
Yeah, but Transformers Ghostbusters, we have a 0 to 5 with half point scale for the GCR Universal rating system. I would probably give this a solid 3, 3.5. Only because the story, like you said, it's needlessly
uncomplicated.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing to kind of get new readers in. Where it really got me and where I would probably rate it separately is the art. The art is easily a 5 because they did so much here with how good the Transformers look, with how good the Ghostbusters look. I mean, it's just everything was so cool.
Yeah. No, writing is a 5 out of 5. The writing's 4.5 out of 5 ghost traps and 5 ghost traps out of 5 for the art. Like I said, it's just I just think you have Gozer show up, and I kind of take that half point off just because, I mean, that sets certain expectations for me. Like, I expected Gozer to show up at the end and not be Krim Zeke. I mean, if I was running, I would have had, like, Gozer come back and have Robo Gozer versus the Ghostbusters, and Bane is like, hey, got an upgrade, huh? And set up Krem Zeke for like the villain in the sequel is what I would have done. And it's just little, you know, maybe different art choices. Like you said, it's just overall Ectotron just kind of looks really plain in a way. And
yeah,
it didn't come together until he put the name tag on, which is a very minor nitpick. Yeah. But yeah, it's, I can't recommend this enough, folks. This is, if you were to do just and simple crossover comics, not months long with all the spin-offs that Marvel and DC have done the last few years, like just 5 and done kind of crossovers, mm-hmm. like this is in my top 3. The only one that I would put above this, and it is my current number one in that context, is He-Man Thundercats.
Yeah, that was a good one.
You know, Mumator.
That was a little much, but other than that, that was a good one, yeah.
I'll get you next time, Venkman. Yeah.
Yep. All right, folks, coming up next here inside the pull bag in July, comics are red there. Transformers Beast Wars number 6 with Steve Megatron, and then somebody, I don't know who yet, is going to join me to talk about Ryan Drost's Stealth Hammer, and then Edward and Kendra Hale will join me for episode 420 as we talk about the closing issues of Radiant Black's first arc. That's issues 5 and 6. So that's what's coming up here inside the pull bag, and then all of August, which is already done, and I just have to still edit it at this point of recording, but we have TMNT month for August. We've got Bebop and Rocksteady Hit the Road, City at War Parts 1 and 2, Shredder in Hell, and we did a separate special episode for TMNT 100 from IDW. So it's all TMNT month in August, and then in September, for at least 3 episodes, JT will be back as we get through Scooby-Doo Team-Up, Volumes 3 through 8. So that's what's coming up here inside the pull bag. What do you got going on with whatever you're doing?
Well, still doing every week, more or less, with Ben the host, Carver, and Red Ink on Comic Connoisseurs, talking sundry different topics in and around comic books. And I'm also still doing, we've bit of a long pause. I mean, granted, it's once a month with Mike the Birdman Dodd with the Sunday Funnies on Twig, although last couple episodes have been me and Alex the producer, because as some of you may or may not know, Birdman has been ill the last long while, and he's getting better, but yep, he's not quite 100%. So hopefully he'll be back soon, and the first episode back with him, I think we're going to be talking about the Dreamwave era Transformers comics.
I don't know what it is with those. I never got into them when they were going on, but I kind of wish that they would be online. I kind of wish Comixology, Amazon, whomever would figure out a way to get those to be able, because I've just never, like, I can go on the TF Wiki and read the synopsis, but it's not the same thing as actually reading the comic book. It just isn't kind of a thing.
And say what you will about Pat Lee and his business practices and the eventual demise of Dreamwave. Yeah. Like, I've interacted a couple of times online with him because I friended him on Facebook. And granted, you don't get a lot from those interactions, but the fact that he's still out there, he's still working, he interacts with fans. And I mean, ultimately, it's just money. It was a really shitty thing what happened at the end of Dreamwave, so it's not like I'm giving him a pass on that. But
That's the thing. Like, for me, I don't even know what the hell happened. I don't care what happened. Like, see, for me, it's like I separate Cliff Huxtable from the monster that is Bill Cosby.
And that I character haven't gotten was there yet myself.
Huh?
I haven't been able to separate the art from the artist in that respect.
You know, it is what it is.
And basically, very basically, is he owed a lot of the creators and the writers and the artists and everyone that worked for Dreamwave money.
Okay.
And then when the company collapsed, like, nobody got paid. So I don't know if he's made reparations in the 15 years since. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, we're, like I said, when Birdman comes back, we'll be talking about Dreamwave Transformers. And there's a lot of it's one of those things. It's like watching the Dreamwave Transformers comics is like watching Firefly. You get to the end and you can't wait to see what's going to happen next. And then you realize it's never going to happen.
Yep.
So there we go.
Absolutely. Is that really what the whole story is called? Sorry, I'm looking up Transformers Terminator because I'm trying to plan the next crossover thing we're going to cover. All right, that's going to do it for us here inside the pull bag. Where can people find you online, sir?
Well, you can find me online, like I said, with the Comic Connoisseurs podcast and Twig's Sunday Funnies podcast. You can also find me on most of the social medias at JT from Saskatoon.
Awesome. I'm at TFG and Mike. You'll hear all the other social stuff and everything else in the outro. Coming up next inside the pull bag, as I said a second ago, we have got Transformers Beast Wars number 6. This is the finale to the first arc by Eric Burnham with art by Josh Burcham. So that's coming up next here in July on the pull bag from the Geekcast Radio Network. Make your great escape into comics, and we will catch you next time.
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullbag, the GCRN's first comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate and leave a review for the show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Become a fan of us on Facebook, facebook.com/thepullbag. Send us an email, feedback@geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter @ThePullBag and @ GeekCastRadio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.